Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be here with you on a Monday afternoon. Thank you very much for being here with us. We've got a great show for you today. Two folks that you probably know well, Michael Lofton from Reason and Theology this hour, next hour, Jason Evert from Chastity.com and the Chastity Project. And with Jason, we'll talk about the transgender movement and chastity in general. Your questions welcome this hour. We talk about orthodoxy. That is an area that Michael has spent a good part of his intellectual life exploring. He has a new book from Catholic Answers Press, which we have talked about on this show, Answering Orthodoxy, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East. If you'd like to talk about orthodoxy, if you are an Orthodox person, maybe an Eastern Catholic, or maybe you're one of those folks who's Catholic or Protestant and you're thinking, I really want the fullness of the sacramental life of the Church, that sacramental life that Jesus clearly gave us through the apostles. But I'm not so hot on the Catholic Church. If that's you, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. As I said, Michael Lofton, in addition to being the author of Answering Orthodoxy, is the proprietor of Reason and Theology and a good friend here at Catholic Answers. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me back on, Cy.
And what kind of response are you getting to the book, Answering Orthodoxy?
Great responses. It reached number one in many, many different categories.
Really?
And I've been getting, and I've been also getting just a lot of personal feedback from people, great reviews that have also been left online. So
Great.
It seems to have been really productive so far.
Yeah. And I think that's what you were going for, was something that's not just argumentative or an intellectual exercise, but actually is productive in people's lives.
Yeah. And the hope is, of course, that, and it's primarily aimed at Catholics who are thinking about leaving for Eastern Orthodoxy. And the hope is to show them that really everything that Orthodoxy has to offer, all those good things are already found in Catholicism. And a lot of the argumentations against Catholicism that Orthodox use ultimately fail. And so, yeah, I think that it has helped show a lot of Catholics that they need to stay put, even if they might be frustrated with certain things going on in the Church.
888-318-7884, the number. If you have questions about Catholicism and Orthodoxy, you are very welcome to call. You don't have to be a Christian person. You don't have to have any, whatever your background. If you just have questions or you want to bring up a point, make a suggestion, make an assertion, whatever it is, we want to talk about Orthodoxy today. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. A couple questions before you, before we get into it with callers, and I really do hope people will feel welcome here, welcome to call and have these conversations. But the first question: do you think that the Catholic kind of exodus to Orthodoxy that has happened with some people is related to the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Church?
Certainly that's part of it. People are scandalized by various things that have taken place in the Catholic Church. And so they're looking for greener pastures, and they feel they're ultimately going to find that in Eastern Orthodoxy. Unfortunately, they're going to find similar issues elsewhere, regardless of where they look. But more importantly, the question is, which church did Christ establish, and which one does he will for us to be in? Because that's ultimately where we need to be, whether or not there are scandals in this church. If this is where Christ wants us and wills for us to be, then we need to be there. And ultimately what I'm exploring in the book is, okay, well, where is that church? What is the church that Christ established? And I think that there are answers that identify visibly that Christ established the Catholic Church. And interestingly enough, many of the councils that the Orthodox have already accepted also accept councils that affirm, for instance, the Catholic understanding of the papacy, which would then indicate that the Catholic Church is the one established by Christ, especially if the papacy, the Pope, is an institution that Jesus established.
888-318-7884, the number. The lines will fill up, so don't wait. Go ahead and dial so that we can get your call on with Michael. Answering Orthodoxy is the new book from Michael Lofton. 888-318-7884. What's been your own relationship with Orthodoxy, Michael, in your life?
I've always been fascinated by it. I've researched it for a very long time, and I think there's a lot to admire about the Eastern tradition, especially as it's found in Eastern Orthodoxy. I think it has a wonderful liturgy, great spirituality and piety. So there's a lot that is attractive there, and I've been attracted to it for many, many years. So I've researched it, studied it. I've also been a member of the Eastern Orthodox Church. But ultimately, I realized if the papal claims, that is, the claims about the Pope, if they are true, especially as they're understood by the Catholic Church, then I have to be in the Catholic Church. And frankly, everything that Eastern Orthodoxy has that I admire and I value is already found within the Catholic Church, especially with the Eastern Catholics. Eastern Catholics are Orthodox who have come back into communion with Rome in the Catholic Church, but have preserved their Eastern heritage.
888-318-7884. I recently had occasion to go by a Greek Orthodox church when they were celebrating Sunday Mass, and it's different. At least this was in a bustling city. The church was packed, which was beautiful to see, but everybody's standing up and people coming and going, and it looked a little different than, a little less sedate, I have to say, than, maybe sedate is the wrong word. Well, I think sedate is the right word, than I'm used to in a Catholic church.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's also interesting that you noted that they were standing. Because yes, in many of the Orthodox churches, the entire liturgy is standing. Now, you might sit during the homily, but for the rest of the time, you're standing all throughout, because in the Eastern tradition, going back to the very early centuries of the Christian church, in the East, standing is the most respectful way, is the most respectful posture, if you will. Yeah.
Again, 888-318-7884. We're talking with Michael Lofton about Orthodoxy from a Catholic perspective, of course. The new book from Michael Lofton, Answering Orthodoxy. Lines are beginning to fill up, but there are a few lines open, so a perfect time to call as we head into the break. Right now, you can get Answering Orthodoxy on sale, 25% off. 25% off? Man, they really want this thing to move over at shop.catholic.com. It's on sale along with everything else, but 25% off is a good deal. Check it out at shop.catholic.com. We'll take a very quick break to allow you to dial the phone, and we'll come right to calls when we come back with Michael Lofton. 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, "Why don't you air these people?" And I said, "No, because I don't think they're Catholic." He says, "By what right do you have to say that?" I said, "I own the network."
Mother Angelica Live Classics, every morning, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Michael Lofton, who we've had on recently to talk about this book. And I'm very glad to hear, Michael, that it is finding a great deal of success, because it's quite readable. And this is kind of my, I don't know, this is my pet peeve with some Christian books, is like, exactly who are we writing this for? And this one, you can go through objection after objection to the Catholic faith posed by Orthodox people, and then get a really readable 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 page basic introduction to how a Catholic would respond to that.
Yeah. You know, I intended it for it to be something that's very accessible, that does not require any kind of knowledge on part of the reader. So I wanted to make it as easy as possible to understand without anybody having to do a deep dive as a prerequisite. And yeah, I also wanted to focus it towards Catholics who are specifically thinking about leaving for Eastern Orthodoxy. But at the same time, I also think Orthodox who are interested in Catholicism would benefit from it as well, because it will show them some of the arguments that they used to critique Catholicism are not good arguments, and they're also inconsistent because they would come back to bite the Orthodox themselves. And then I also think that even though it's, again, not specifically written for Protestants, I actually think Protestants would benefit from it, because if they're discerning between Catholicism and Orthodoxy, or they just kind of want to know what are the differences, this will certainly help them with that.
Well, this is actually something we see quite a bit, and there's been some famous cases of this, of Protestants who become convinced of the sacramental nature of the faith, that they want that liturgical sacramental church that Jesus gave us. They become aware that that's missing, and they go to Orthodoxy, because Orthodoxy is missing some of the things that are most bothersome to Protestants, most particularly the Pope.
Yeah, it is missing some things, but then it also has a lot of things that attract people, and so there's a lot of people that are certainly looking to the East, and I don't knock them for looking to the beauty and riches that they'll find there. I just want to simply say, but you also find those in Catholicism. Yeah. So then the question is, which one is right? Which one is the one that Christ established?
Let's go to the phones. I promised I would. 888-318-7884 is the number. Matt is in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on The Rock, 1260 AM. Matt, we're awful glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Michael Lofton.
Hi. The Catholic Church claims the apostle it derives its authority from is Peter. The Coptic Church claims it's Saint Mark of Alexandria, who wrote the second gospel. And I understand the Orthodox claim Andrew, or at least the Russians do, Andrew the First called. And I was flipping through some book that said they claim the office of Andrew survives just like Peter or Saint Mark.
Yeah, there's a couple things going on here. I would first of all point you to Father Francis Dvornik's book called The Idea of Apostolicity, where I think he shows historically that Constantinople really cannot claim to be in succession to the Apostle Andrew. But even if it could, let's say somehow that Saint Andrew founded the see of that particular territory, that really wouldn't negate the Catholic claims, because ultimately we're saying that our succession that we find, especially with the Bishop of Rome, goes back to St. Peter. And St. Peter was given a primacy over all of the apostles, including Andrew. And that primacy is then passed on to their successors. So the successor of St. Peter is going to hold a certain kind of primacy over the successors of Andrew or John or any other apostle that you might find.
A follow-up question. A lot of people in Cleveland are angry that the Latin Mass, the Tridentine Mass, is being suppressed. So they're going to the Byzantine Church, which has the liturgy of St. John Chrysostom, or however his name is pronounced. And the Byzantine Church is an Orthodox church which acknowledges the Pope as their head. So is it all right for Catholics to go over to the Byzantine Church?
So I'm a member of the Byzantine Catholic Church, so certainly a Catholic can go to one, and you don't even have to be an Eastern Catholic to attend one. Any Catholic, Western or Eastern, can attend any other Catholic church and receive communion. So yes, you could go to a Byzantine Catholic church and receive Holy Communion and enjoy the benefits of that liturgy.
Well, listen, I'm very good. Going to get one of your book, and thank you for being on, and thank you for writing on this topic, because Cleveland has a very large variety of Orthodox and Catholic churches, They have Serbian, Russian, Ukrainian, Catholic, Byzantine, Maronite, Coptic, you name it, we got it. All right?
Wow.
Thank
Well, hang on. Don't go anywhere because I'd like to give you the book for free because I appreciate your call and your endorsement of this topic. So Answering Orthodoxy, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East, the new book from Michael Lofton is on its way to you as long as you just hang on and give an address to Edgar, and then Edgar will send the book out to you. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-318-7884. And Michael Lofton, the proprietor of Reason and Theology and a longtime friend here at Catholic Answers. And let me give you an objection from your own book, Michael.
Sure.
Because this is the thing about it. I just want to give people an idea of what's in it. And so you'll get to, like I am on page 71 right now. Mm-hmm. And it just gives the objection, and then you respond to the objection. And so here's what an Orthodox person might say about a Catholic teaching. And this one says, the Immaculate Conception implies that Mary had a different nature from the rest of humanity. So this is an actual Orthodox objection to the Catholic teaching that you've heard, and then you're responding to it?
Right. Not all Orthodox will use this objection, but I have heard some. And I think that there's a misunderstanding here. When we say that the Virgin Mary is free from all stain of original sin, we're not saying she has a different nature than us. Because if she did, then yes, Jesus, who took his human nature from the Virgin Mary, would then have a different nature than the rest of mankind. And upon what basis then could he redeem all of humanity if he doesn't have our same nature? But it starts with a faulty premise. We believe the Virgin Mary has the same nature as we do, because original sin and the stain of sin is not native to human nature. It's foreign to human nature. It's not part of human nature. Human nature was originally free from the stain of original sin. So whenever we say the Virgin Mary, again, is free from the stain of original sin, we're not saying she has a different nature. We're just simply saying that she is not subject to certain effects of the fall of Adam. However, she is subject to some of the external effects of the fall of Adam. For instance, we as Catholics would admit that she passed away. We actually venerate this in the liturgical calendar in the Eastern Catholic Church as her dormition, just as the Eastern Orthodox venerate this feast. So we recognize that she was subject to some of the external effects of the fall, but she didn't have any of the internal effects. She didn't have some disposition or disordered will or disposition to sin. She didn't have that in the same way that we might struggle with certain things that we would call concupiscence. We might struggle with a disposition that's inclined to doing something evil, and our human will fights against that. She didn't have that internal war going on. Neither did Jesus, by the way.
I'm going to go to line two, just to let Edgar know. I'm going to go to Nora in Idaho. We're talking about Answering Orthodoxy, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East, the new book by Michael Lofton. If you have questions about Catholicism and Orthodoxy, you are welcome to call. Nora in Idaho, thank you very much for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Michael.
Hi, Michael. You said that a Roman and right Catholic can commune at an East Orthodox church, right?
At an Eastern Catholic church.
Yes, sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the answer is yes?
That's correct. At an Eastern Catholic church, yes.
Maybe we should, Nora, just get a distinction there between an Eastern Orthodox Church and an Eastern Catholic Church, and then we'll continue with your question if you'd like, but because I would like to be clear on that, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. So Eastern Catholics are in full communion in the Catholic Church. We are Catholics, but we do preserve that Eastern tradition. So the same liturgy that you'll find in an Eastern Orthodox Church, we have that same form of worship in the Eastern Catholic Church. The difference is we are under the Pope.
So, Nora, if that made sense, did you have a...
So would you commune, you as an Eastern Orthodox Catholic, would you commune at a Roman Latin Rite church, yes or no?
Oh, absolutely. I do all the time, actually.
I can't get past the idea that we're having a miscommunication, however, and I think it might have to do with the phone line. Nora, do you I'm not sure, you might be, and I'm missing it, but are you clear on the distinction between an Eastern Catholic and an Eastern Orthodox church?
No, maybe that's my thing, because from what I know is there are some Eastern Orthodox Catholics, I think they're called, but they have different, there's fake ones. There's like ones that are 20 years old, and then there's the real ones. But like, that's not my question. I also know about East Orthodox Catholics, and they have their own leader. You said you accept the Holy Father, and that's true, because but then you guys broke away from that, and now you guys are you have another leader. So that's your pope, right? You wouldn't call him pope, but that's your leader. You kind of sidestepped the Holy Father.
No, you're misunderstanding.
Let's get a clarification.
You're misunderstanding. No, I'm an Eastern Catholic. We are under the Pope. We are not broken away from the Catholic Church. You're confusing me with an Eastern Orthodox. They are broken away from the Pope. They are not under him. We have the same liturgy as Eastern Orthodox, that is us Eastern Catholics. We have the same liturgy, but the difference is we're under the Pope and they're not. They broke away.
Nora, I just want to check one more time. Is that clear?
Okay, but then you guys have different doctrines. You guys have a different side of purgatory. Like, you have a different way we have different saints, right? Don't we have different saints?
No, we venerate the same saints. I think you're confusing Eastern Catholicism with Eastern Orthodoxy. Eastern Orthodoxy is a group of 16 different churches that are not under Pope Francis, whereas the Eastern Catholic churches are 23 different churches that are under Pope Francis. And we have the same doctrines, the same beliefs about purgatory as Latin Rite Catholics do.
Yeah, it's a maybe somewhat subtle but important distinction. I actually don't know how subtle it is. Although there is a subtlety in this, there are people who, whatever the dogmas, the teachings, the histories are, they slide between both churches. They'll slide between Orthodox and Eastern Catholic churches.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do want to be clear, though. I mean, some of the Eastern Orthodox reject some of the doctrines that we would accept as Catholics, right? So there are differences there. But as Eastern Catholics, we accept every doctrine that, you know, every Latin Rite Catholic accepts.
Nora, thank you. I do hope that was clear. If you'd like a copy of Answering Orthodoxy, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East, Michael Lofton's new book, all you got to do is hang on the line, Nora. We'll get your information and we will get the book to you. In the meantime, I'm going to go to James right up the road from us here in Del Mar, California, listening on 1240 a.m. Really, 1240 a.m. I got to look that up. James, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Michael Lofton.
Yeah, Ash, are we there?
Yes, you're on. You're on, James. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right, thank you. Okay, we'll go by James. I'm actually Dean, but I was a raised-up Catholic, and I was missed out on for like 10 years of my life being away from Christ, and I was introduced back into the Orthodox faith, and you know, I do stuff down there, and I see the chart. They have a chart, and I'm being honest, they have a chart. It shows where the Orthodox faith started, which would be with the 12 disciples, and the Catholic faith was right there, and there was a separation. I'm having a really hard time with what the heck happened there. But yet our beliefs are still the same. But yet there's a couple of things that might make you think that, no, we do it traditionally with the communion and fasting, and so do the Catholics and all that stuff there. So, and then from the spread of Christianity, went to Lutherans and blah, 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 all the way down the line. So there's many faces of Christ. I'm just trying to find out I'm really strong with my Catholic faith still, but at the same time, I love my Orthodox faith. So I'm a little bit of a thing. And I'll add one more big spoiler in there. I like listening to the pastors on there, Dr. Jeremiah and some of the other ones and stuff like that. We're a little more Bible-based, that are giving more attention to what the Bible is saying and what's going on. And I'm not confused. I think it's all Christian-based. I'm just trying to figure out what happened in the early days and why there's this, I don't want to call it separation. I'm just confused. Like, what the hell happened?
That all sounds perfectly reasonable. What we can't do is answer right away because we got to take the break. The music is playing, and we're going to have to come back for the answer. But basically, the question is, what the heck happened? How do we all end up in these different churches? And Michael Lofton will give us an answer when we get back. 888-318-7884. Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made, and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answer's own Carlo Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carlo's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
In These 12, The Gospel Through the Apostles' Eyes, best-selling author Rod Bennett gives a riveting re-examination of gospel events from the ground floor perspective of Christ's own hand-picked successors. In his trademark storytelling style, Bennett movingly depicts what it was like for the apostles to witness Jesus' teaching and miracles up close. Why did he call them, and what did he intend for them to do? Order your copy of These 12 today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As we enter the holidays, we are talking about Old Saint Nick.
That's tomorrow's topic on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Michael Lofton, the author of the new book, Answering Orthodoxy, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East. If you want to understand the Catholic perspective on these various questions that are raised between Orthodox and Catholics, this is the book to get. Runs through a whole bunch of them and does so in a way that's quite readable and understandable. James is on the line, or Dean is on the line. I got confused on the name, but wants to know, look, what happened originally to give us this split between the Orthodox and the Catholics? I don't think that he would mind if you also went into the Protestants, but let's at least start with the discussion that we are on today, which is Orthodoxy. How did it happen?
Yeah, it's fascinating because the answer is going to depend on who you ask. I mean, he mentions there that he had a graph that he was shown by Eastern Orthodox, and the Orthodox are established by the 12 apostles, and then you branch out from there, and then Catholics broke away from the original timeline,
yeah.
And then Protestant, you know. But it's interesting because from a Catholic, you'll see the exact opposite. You'll see the Catholic Church start the original timeline from the apostles, and you'll see the Orthodox Orthodox break away from it. And so,
right.
Yeah, it just kind of depends on who you ask. But since I'm a Catholic, I'll give you my perspective. When I look at the historical record, I mean, there are many reasons for the separation between the Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox churches. And frankly, the division had been brewing from as early as the second century and really found a complete break as late as the 1750s.
Wow.
So we're talking a 1600-year process of chipping away at that relationship and, you know, to where you finally have a finalized divorce. But up until that point, there had been all kinds of issues brewing and tremors and splinters and factions and all that. And sometimes we broke away from each other and then entered back into communion and then broke away and entered back. And it was just an absolute mess. But yeah, ultimately, what really led to the division between Catholics and Orthodox is doctrine. You know, we believe as Catholics the claim that the Pope is head of the Church, whereas Eastern Orthodox rejected that eventually, as well as some other doctrines. But they effectively said, no, the Pope doesn't have that kind of authority. He's just equal to any other bishop. So the Pope can't tell us what to do. He can't tell us what we need to believe. He can't exercise any kind of authority in our territory. That's ultimately where the debate is. All of the other debates, you could argue, really are subsumed under this one debate of, you know, the authority of the Pope. So, it's a very, very complicated mess that led to this division. But at the heart of it is a dispute over the role of the Bishop of Rome, the Pope. Does that help answer the question a little bit?
Jane?
It did, Michael. But
okay.
But I want to do, if I have a moment, I'm not trying to debate or anything. I'm really confused on this subject. Is that, where did the Pope fit into... where I'm trying to figure out where everything started, not trying to figure out, I know where it started from Christ, the first church, 12 disciples, cornerstones, on and on. I mean, that's what I've known. I may be wrong in those areas. But where did this Pope thing come into? And in Orthodoxy, we have metropolitans, the bishops, and the way up to the big guy. And are they... to me, I'll be honest, it's going to be really bad. I hope you can cut me off. Are they Pharisees? Are they scribes? Who are these people? Because basic Christianity that I'm getting is that believing in Christ and finding the generations where it started, which would be Orthodox and Catholics, what the heck went wrong? And then we have all these other subdivisions, and then I gave you a couple names at the end, media type stuff. I'm kind of lost on all this, to be honest. So maybe I'll read your book and try. Yeah.
Yeah, the book will certainly help, and it's totally understandable you're lost because there is really just so much involved. I mean, we're talking about nearly 2,000 years of factors that really led to this division. So there's just a lot of history, a lot of a lot of background to it. But you ask the question, where does this Pope thing start? It starts in the Bible. In Matthew 16, Jesus establishes a church. He builds it on St. Peter, who is the head of the apostles. And that office of headship that Peter has over the apostles passes on to the successors of the apostles. And so the successors of St. Peter carry that authority of headship over the rest of the successors of the apostles, that is the bishops. And this is why you can find in many of the early councils, especially the councils that even Eastern Orthodox to this day accept, this is why you can find them teaching the Catholic understanding of the Pope, the Catholic understanding of the papacy. And so as Catholics, we're just simply calling Eastern Orthodox to be faithful to their own councils and their own traditions because they themselves witness to and testify to the Catholic understanding of the authority of the Pope.
I'll tell you what, I would like to send you a copy of Answering Orthodoxy, a Catholic Response to Attacks from the East. I do think that you'll enjoy it. And it's by our guest today, Michael Lofton. If you hang on the line and give an address to Edgar, we will send you a free copy of the book. On we go. There are lines open, however, and we've still got about 20 minutes to the top of the hour. So if you have questions about Orthodoxy, about Catholicism, about the relationship between the two, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Now we go to Emmanuel in Ripon, California, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Thanks for downloading the app. Go ahead with your question for Michael.
Yeah, hey there. Can you guys hear me all right?
Very well, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great, yeah. I just wanted to go off and start with thanking both of you, especially you, Michael, for your ministry with Reason and Theology. It's just been very impactful in my life, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
And so my question was, I have two Orthodox friends, and often when we talk about things like confession, they often bring up the argument, well, the West is very legalistic. And, like, I guess they don't have the differentiation but in sin with, like, mortal and venial sin. So I guess my question was, what is the difference, really, between the way the Catholic Church views confession and the Eastern Orthodox? And I guess, how do you respond when they say that the Catholic Church is legalistic? Whatever that might mean. So,
great questions. A lot going on here. So the distinction between venial and mortal sin, you'll hear some Orthodox say that they don't recognize that distinction, but in reality they do, even if they don't call it that. They recognize there are some sins that would cut you off from the life of Jesus Christ, and there are some that would not. So at the end of the day, that distinction, which is a biblical distinction, by the way, they recognize, they just may not call it that. So I think that, you know, whoever has told you that they don't recognize it, it just sounds to me like they're confused. I think if push came to shove and you just really articulated what we mean by this, they would probably say, yeah, they agree that there is a difference. Now, as far as confession, is it done differently? Only in, you know, kind of accidental features or side features, not anything that would substantially change confession. It's essentially the same thing, but you might have just different elements to it. In the Eastern tradition, yeah, you might find some Orthodox confessors who don't necessarily require you to be as specific about certain sins as maybe it is in the Catholic Church. In the Catholic Church, you have to state the kind of mortal sins you've engaged in, you know, the kind of grave matter, the number as well. It's a little less specific, perhaps, in a lot of Orthodox churches. You might find a confessor who is perfectly fine with you being a little bit more general and vague, and you don't necessarily say, here's the amount of times, the best of my recollection, that I engaged in this sin. So you might find some differences like that, and other differences would be it's generally done face-to-face with a penitent in front of an icon of Jesus. And also some of the wording in the words of absolution is slightly different. The words of absolution being the words that the priest says whenever your sins are forgiven. They might be a little bit different from the Catholic Church, but on the whole, it's essentially the same thing. And I think you had one other question in there, but I'm blanking on what the third question was. Oh, the claim of legalistic. Is the Catholic Church legalistic? I kind of feel like that's a straw man. I don't think that the Catholic Church is legalistic. I think that the Catholic Church tends to be precise, and I don't think that they're the same thing. Being precise is actually a good and helpful thing. And in fact, I think that some of the Eastern churches would benefit from the Catholic Church and its precision, because there is a lack of precision in some things in Eastern Orthodox theology. That does cause some problems. So, yeah, rather than this being an issue in the Catholic Church, I actually find it to be a strength.
Emmanuel, what do you think?
Yeah. No, that is great. Thank you so much. That helps for sure.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, is okay. Yeah. So I was interested in this, and I went to like two local websites of Eastern Orthodox churches just to see like how it says confession works there. And like I noticed that they don't have like confession times mentioned on their website. So I don't know if this really matters, but I was just going to ask, like, I mean, is it very common for people to go to confession in the Eastern Orthodox Church? Is it pretty emphasized, or is it not as emphasized?
It's kind of a mixed bag. Yeah, a lot of times it is by appointment, but sometimes it's also tied to, you know, right before the liturgy or something like that. So, yeah, usually you can just grab a priest right before the liturgy and do confession then.
Emmanuel, thank you. I'd like to send you a copy of the book as well. So if you want to hang on and give Edgar your address, I'll send you a copy of Michael Lofton's new book, Answering Orthodoxy, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East. Excuse me. We have to take a very quick break, and then we will. I got more callers on. We're going to get to you. Just hang on. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
By providing quality programming faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church, EWTN Television is TV that viewers can trust. Whether it's films, documentaries, news coverage, lively discussion shows, or kids programs, we highlight the truth that is the eternal word. For a complete schedule of EWTN Television programs, visit EWTN.com and click TV. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Next hour, Jason Everett will be here. We'll talk about chastity as we do with him, because that is his great expertise and gift, is helping people in the realm of chastity. But the gender issues are huge, and he's been writing about that and speaking about that. So if you've got questions about the whole world of gender issues that we are now in, give us a call next hour and you can talk with Jason Everett about that. Before I go back to the phones with Michael Lofton, our guest, the author of the new book, Answering Orthodoxy, I want to say congratulations to another member of the EWTN radio family. As a matter of fact, I've had the great honor and pleasure of broadcasting from their facilities. Iowa Catholic Radio, celebrating 17 years with EWTN, now serving Iowa with 5 AM and FM stations. Congratulations to Joe Teeling, Matt Wilkham, and everyone at Iowa Catholic Radio, from your friends at EWTN Radio, and from all of us here at Catholic Answers. And let's see where we're going. We're going to Emily in Alabama, watching on YouTube. Emily, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Michael Lofton.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you for doing these questions. I just have a really simple one. I was looking into the churching of a woman after childbirth, and I see that my church, or I guess the Roman Catholic Latin Rite, doesn't really do churching. Is that something found in the Eastern Orthodox Church still, or is that kind of lost to time as a tradition?
Are you referring to when around 40 days after birth, a woman is brought into the church and formally brought back into the church? Is that what you're referencing?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually is something that you'll still find in the Eastern tradition, both Eastern Orthodox churches and Eastern Catholicism. And it kind of is reminiscent and rooted in what we find with Mary and her presentation in the temple 40 days, you know, after giving birth to Christ. So, or I'm sorry, 8 days after giving birth to Christ, if I recall correctly, certainly rooted in that. And so as far as why this dropped off in the Western Rite, I don't know the history of that one. I'm not even sure that it was in the Roman liturgy. If it was, I don't know what the reason was for it being dropped.
Emily?
Yes. Oh, thank you. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Wait, Emily, I'm just, did you come from Orthodoxy into Catholicism? Is that why you know about this?
I have a number of friends that are very traditional and also are coming from an Orthodox background.
Oh, I see.
So I had heard the term before.
Ah, I see. And when's your baby due?
December 16th.
I had a feeling. Congratulations, Emily.
Thank you.
Listen, a little word of advice for you. Two different presents. This one covers Christmas and the birthday present. All right, Emily?
Yes.
All right. I tell you what, babies love Michael Lofton's writing. So if you'd like a free copy of Answering Orthodoxy for the Baby, just hang on and we will send you a free copy of Answering Orthodoxy, the baby edition. We don't have a baby edition, but we're going to send you a copy of the book. What a delightful call. Thanks, Emily. It's always wonderful to hear there's a baby coming. Let's go to Luke in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Luke, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Michael Lofton.
Hi, can you hear me?
Very well, yes.
Alrighty. Thanks very much for the work that you do at Catholic Answers. So I did a stint for 5 years in the Orthodox Church, and I since converted to being an Eastern Catholic. So I guess my question, where I'm at right now, in talking, you know, to the people I know who are still Orthodox, especially when it comes to the office of the papacy, is how do you have those conversations, have those dialogues, and keep it positive? Because obviously I have, you know, a set of reasons why I left Orthodoxy that are kind of negative things that I didn't like about Orthodoxy. But like in your experience with dialoguing with Orthodox people, how do you keep it focused on like the positive things that are good about Catholicism and the papacy?
Yeah, I try to focus on what we have in common. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, at some point I do try to nudge them in the right direction by addressing some of the differences that we have to help, you know, kind of in a gentle way, urge them to consider a reunion with Catholicism. But yeah, I tend to focus on things that we have in common, which is the vast majority of things. I mean, the vast majority of things that we hold to as Catholics, we share in common with Eastern Orthodox. So we can certainly look at what is going on in society and we can unite with them and we can say, yeah, we're in agreement that this thing that's going on in society is wrong and we can stand firm together against it. So yeah, focusing on those things, that will certainly help keep it positive. But there's still a positive and productive way to at some point maybe address some of those differences, not in a confrontational way, but in a friendly and charitable way, so that we do address those issues at some point, because we don't want to be indifferent to those differences.
What do you think?
Yeah, that makes sense. So like specifically when it comes to the papacy and the office of like the practical ability of the Bishop of Rome to, mm-hmm. you know, act in individual parishes and dioceses, which is mm-hmm. something that Orthodox people generally seem to object to. Like, what is the like historical evidence that you tend to point to with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, not only do you have the actual just doctrinal evidence found in the ecumenical councils, but also you have various instances of this, particularly during the monothelite controversy, where you have people who would say that Jesus only has one will, not two wills, not both a human and divine will, but only one will. Whenever we were combating those heresies, a lot of the Eastern churches embraced that heresy or that error. And what the Pope did, you can see multiple popes, one of them being Pope Theodore, he went and actually had individuals or bishops from Rome sent to those Eastern territories to kick out the bishops that were heretics there and put in new bishops in those territories. So he was very clearly interfering in the affairs of other bishops by doing so.
I did not know that. Thank you. That was very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about a copy of Answering Orthodoxy? We're happy to send it to you if you'd like a copy. I'll tell
you
what.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
I got scared you were going to be like, nah, never mind. So I'm glad that went well. Just hang on, and we'll get your information, and we will send it off to you. Michael Lofton is our guest. And Answering Orthodoxy is his new book, A Catholic Response to Attacks from the East. Michael, it's like, as you've said several times, it's a long and winding history, but it you've kind of taken the top 30 objections to to Catholicism from the Eastern Orthodox.
Exactly.
Help me with this one. This is number 30. Catholics use unleavened bread for the Eucharist. Is that is that a serious and grave objection that people have?
Not so much these days.
Oh, okay.
You still will hear it brought up these days.
Okay.
But what I mean is, it's not as bad as it used to be, believe it or not.
Really?
Originally, when we're really talking about massive problems between East and West, the number one dispute was this issue. Do we use leavened bread or unleavened bread? That was the, not the papacy, not the filioque, not purgatory, not issues about Mary. Do you use leavened or unleavened bread? That was the number one issue. And then you'd also see, can priests have beards? That was also a really big issue. there was a dispute there on whether or not priests can be clean shaven or should they have beards.
It's weird that these things seem trivial to us, but they're, but I suppose the concerns that we have today will seem trivial at some point.
I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, we all look back on this and think, yeah, this is pretty absurd. And yet this was first and foremost for them. And it's odd that the papacy initially wasn't, although it did turn out to be the biggest issue. So some of these side issues did kind of go away. They lost their, you know, prominence, I guess, in the dispute. And to the forefront came the papacy and the filioque. But yeah, oddly enough, unleavened bread was the biggest one at first. So, I mean, Jesus used clearly unleavened bread historically during the Last Supper, but both East and West very early on began to use leavened bread. And frankly, because of that, it just means that both are legitimate. So there's nothing wrong with you either using unleavened bread for the Eucharist or leavened bread. There's some pros and cons to both, but both are legitimate. And, you know, that's the Catholic perspective. And a lot of Orthodox at this point kind of concede that one and say, yeah, they're both, you know, legitimate. We might prefer one over the other, but they're both legitimate. But no, some Orthodox are diehard and they say, no. It has to be leavened. It cannot be unleavened.
I'm going to go to Sean. And Sean, we've only got a couple minutes left before the music will play. So if you could be quick with your question, we'll try to get an answer from Michael for you.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, I'm kind of learning about the whole Orthodox thing basically through you guys. But in the Eastern Orthodox, is the Eucharist the real Eucharist there or is it not? Because
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. For Catholics, we believe they truly have Jesus in the Eucharist. And also Eastern Orthodox believe they truly have Jesus in the Eucharist. So they really do believe the same thing that we do. We articulate it maybe a little bit differently. We might use terms like transubstantiation. They may not necessarily use that term. But at the end of the day, we're saying the same thing.
And this is an area where, because we believe essentially the same thing, there has been a cross-pollination of theology where you might take a sacramental theology course in a Catholic seminary and you're reading Orthodox on the Eucharist. And I imagine it might go the other way, although I don't know that.
Sometimes it has gone the other way. Yeah, actually, Jesuits had a significant amount of influence on the seminarian training of many Orthodox in the 18th century, for instance.
Yeah. Sean, you were really quick. Did that get at what you wanted?
Yeah, thank you. What's the definition of Orthodox, if you have time?
Define it, Michael.
Yeah, right belief, right worship, that's effectively what the term refers to. And so we as Catholics also say we're Orthodox, right? I mean, we believe we have right belief, right worship.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's effectively what the term is.
Sean, thank you very much. Hang on for your book. There's no reason why you shouldn't get one. I gave one to everybody else today. Answering Orthodoxy, a Catholic response to attacks from the East. If you didn't call and get a free copy, you can get your copy 25% off right now at shop.catholic.com. 25% off. Use the promo code. Just use the word Orthodoxy, and that promo code will save you 25%. Michael Lofton, as always, a great pleasure, and congratulations again on the magnificent book. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, that doesn't do it for us. We've got Jason Everett come in. How's that for a day? You start with Michael Lofton and you go right into Jason Everett. That's pretty good. That's what we call booking. That's what we call booking. We're not messing around here. We'll be right back. We'll talk about chastity. We'll talk about gender with the guy who knows that stuff as well as anyone, Jason Everett, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.